Chapter 36. This, Anakin thinks, would also be a really good time to be able to hide himself with the Force. He can feel the vast, consuming, greedy edges of the Sith Lord's power laid like a shroud over the room, but doesn't dare get any closer. Kix, Reese, and Thorn halted several paces back, where vast black columns provide cover. But Anakin walks right up to the corner with Fox, pauses there when Fox does, and he can feel the roil of Fox's fear beneath the dark power around them, wants to reach out, but isn't sure how to or if it will be welcome right now. Padme doesn't cling when she's worried. She doesn't like being grabbed and held and all the other things Anakin usually feels like he needs. And Anakin knows that, respects it, but it doesn't change his first instinct. But Fox turns and looks at him, silent, and raises a hand. Instantly, Anakin reaches out. He clasps Fox's wrist, pulls him a half step closer, and Fox is the one to lean in. Anakin bumps foreheads with him, hard enough to feel even through his helmet, and tightens his grip. Doesn't say anything, can't, but through the helmet, he can see Fox close his eyes, just for a moment. Through the press of their foreheads, he can feel the breath he takes. In the Force, he feels like fear and determination in equal measure, edged with bloody rage. And Anakin breathes with him for long, strung-out seconds before Fox finally pulls away and lets go. "Good luck," Anakin thinks. Not sure if Fox will hear it, but he likes to think he sees the line of Fox's shoulders ease for just a moment. Then, raising his chin, Fox starts moving. He stalks around the corner, the exact stride he uses in the Senate building, perfectly controlled and confident, and disappears. Anakin presses himself up against the wall, listening to the sound of his footsteps change. From a hall to a vast room, and the echo gains a metallic edge. "Jek Thir," Fox barks, "with me." And then, low and unmistakable, there's a quiet, amused sound Anakin has heard 100 times before. "Commander," Palpatine says, and there's no way that isn't his voice. "A problem?" There's a long, long moment of silence. Anakin freezes, practically holding his breath, and closes his eyes, trying to sense anything. All he can feel is darkness, though, and he frowns, reaches. "Ah," Palpatine says, soft. "That was a lie. You shouldn't be able to do that, Commander." Fox chokes, sudden and desperate, and Anakin hears his boots scrape the floor, kick like he was just lifted by the throat, he thinks, and anger surges, hot and sharp in his chest. He grabs his lightsaber from his belt, flashes a signal to Kix and the others, and runs. Even with all of the evidence, with all the glimpses in the troopers' minds, it's still a shock like a bucket of cold water to round the corner and see Palpatine in a long hooded robe, hand raised as Fox chokes and struggles in the air in front of him. For one brief instant, Anakin falters, and he doesn't immediately lunge. It's an instant too long. Palpatine turns, going still, and Anakin can feel the dark, sharp blade of his surprise slicing across his mind. "Lord Jedgar," Palpatine says to the tall, bearded man standing across from him. "What is this? You bring Jedi to our meeting?" Lord Jedgar smiles thinly. "No," he says. "The only Jedi here has been dealt with. I brought you a Sith apprentice, ready to fall. All he needs is one more push." "Slag-chucking Sith spit," Ao says, as the last trace of red fades behind them, sounding stunned. "Language," Chip says, without looking up from the instruments. "Everyone holding steady?" very, very carefully, Pons uncurls his fingers from the edge of the chair and straightens. "Well shaken," he says with humor, even if it feels like he left his stomach somewhere back in the nebula. "Blowback?" "ATRTs are fine, sir," Blowback answers. "Razor and I strapped them in tight. I think we should all chip in and get Clip and Ao some more piloting lessons, though." Ao makes a rude sound. "General Kuhn himself couldn't have managed better," he says, offended. "Go sit on a..." "Ao," Pons says patiently, and Ao cuts himself off with a huff. Unbuckling his harness, Pons rises to his feet, catching Razor's eye, and the sergeant nods silently. He does his own, careful not to let the clips bang against the seat, and rises. In the seat beside him, Ahsoka gives him and then Pons a wary look. Pons touches a hand to his ear, then points at the hatch to the engines, and her eyes widen. She reaches for her own harness, and Pons isn't about to argue with Jedi backup. Whatever was bouncing around the engine room during the crossing is likely just a bit of cargo that wasn't strapped down correctly, but there's a chance it isn't, too. Another faint thump comes as they cross the deck, Razor taking the lead, and behind them, Stack says, deliberately pitched to Carrie, "I don't know, Vode, that was more General Skywalker than General Kuhn." Clip snorts, watching Razor ease open the hatch. "We haven't crashed nearly enough ships to be like Skywalker," he retorts. "This whole trip felt kind of like one extended crash," Brass says. "No offense." Pons drops through the hatch, landing as silently as he can, and pulls a vibroblade from his boot. There's no way he's going to use a blaster in the tight confines of the engine room, because that's just asking for trouble, and up ahead, another faint scuff, quiet enough that he wouldn't catch it if he weren't listening for it. Ahsoka lands next to him. Her narrowed eyes say she caught it too. When Pons glances over at her, she smiles, all teeth, and Pons has to swallow a chuckle. T'Gruta are genetically predisposed to be hunters, and he appreciates it about them. When he flicks a signal at her, she nods readily and ducks sideways into a narrow corridor between the equipment, steps perfectly silent. Behind Pons, Razor hits the decking, then straightens and nods, and Pons starts forward, minding his feet carefully. There's another scuff just around the corner of the main engine array, and Pons tightens his grip on the knife, then ducks around it fast, ready to take their stowaways by surprise. "Oh, Commander," General Billaba says brightly from where she's seated on the ground with a thermos of what smells like Mace's favorite tea. "Care to join us?" There's a thump, and a moment later, Ahsoka ducks out of hiding. "Master Billaba?" she demands. "Caleb?" The commander gives her a slightly awkward wave. "Hi, Ahsoka," he offers, and smiles sheepishly at Pons. "Hi, Commander." Pons looks from the general to her Padawan, then over at Razor, who looks resigned but not overly surprised. Then again, Razor's usually the one who works directly with Mace. He's had plenty of experience with Jedi in general, and Depa in particular. "Gray is probably looking for you, sir," he tells Depa, but slides his vibroblade back into his boot. "I'm pretty sure he didn't pick his name in the hopes that that's what color you'd turn his hair." Depa chuckles, lithely rising to her feet and straightening her robes. "Gray will be fine," she says. "My master is the one I'm worried about. We're through the nebula, I take it?" "Yes, sir," Pons eyes her, and then says, "You could have asked." Depa hums, tilting her head. "Your pilot and medic seemed rather shifty about things as it was," she says. "And beyond that, too much discussion might have given you away. If Obi-Wan had caught wind of it, he'd have wanted to come as well, and landing a quarter of the council in Sith space is more of a headache than I'd care to deal with." It sounds perfectly reasonable. In the same way that Mace sounds perfectly reasonable when he's justifying doing something that looks insane from the outside. Pons pauses, holding Depa's gaze for a long, long moment, and then says, "You had a feeling, didn't you?" Despite the fact that it's not a question, Depa laughs and answers, "I did. You're going to need me, and Caleb refused to be left behind, so you get both of us." She raises a brow at Ahsoka. "Or rather, all three of us. I assume Ahsoka wasn't precisely a planned addition to your squadron?" "I saw Razor stashing armor when I was looking for a ship to steal," Ahsoka admits, smirking. And behind Pons, Razor groans. "Well," he says, "at least Brass and Clip can't give me grief over that now, seeing as they didn't manage to do more than tip you off, General Billabaugh."
"I try not to read minds," Depa agrees serenely. "But when someone is shouting, 'Don't look at me,' it's rather hard to keep from looking at them."
Pons sighs and makes a mental note to sit Brass and Clip down and go over all the ways to hide their thoughts from a Force user. Again. He knows they learned on Kamino. Apparently, it's time for a refresher course. "Welcome aboard then, General," Pons says, and offers Caleb a hand up. "You two didn't get knocked around by the nebula too much, did you?"
"I think I bounced off the ceiling once," Caleb admits, grinning.
Pons chuckles, clapping him lightly on the shoulder.
"I think that means a lot less for a Jedi than it would for anyone else," he says, and Caleb shrugs.
"Do you know where Master Windu ended up?" he asks.
"Io's trying to pick up a trail now," Pons assures him, and glances at Depa. "I know Commander Tano and General Skywalker have a bond, sir, but..."
"Mace and I have one as well," Depa allows. She leads the way back towards the main deck, scaling the ladder and offering a cheerful, "Good morning, Lightning," as she emerges. There's a moment of complete silence. Just as Pons emerges, Brass groans.
"General," he says, sounding entirely abashed. "That change of subject wasn't enough, I take it."
Depa chuckles, resting a hand on Caleb's head as he ducks closer to her.
"Not quite," she allows. "But it was impressively quick. Ayo, any chance you found something?"
Ayo gives her a look, then eyes Pons, who waves a hand in silent agreement. It's not like they can turn around and drop her and Caleb off on the Endurance, then try again. Besides, if she and Mace have a bond, she can help them find him.
"Not yet, sir," he says after a moment. "I'm trying to track the signal from the ship General Skywalker commandeered. Broadside got a pretty good lock on it before he had to peel off. But there's a lot of space out here."
"We're tracking the ship that came through earlier, too," Pond says, watching as Ayo pulls up the only star map they could find of the space inside the caldera. It's centuries out of date, but given how long it's been since anyone willingly came into the territory of the old Sith Empire, Pons will take it.
"Its signal was scrambled, but there shouldn't be much broadcasting out here, so it should be easy enough to pick up."
Depa makes a low, thoughtful sound and closes her eyes. Reaching out, she splays a hand above the star map, bandage-wrapped fingers spread. Looking interested, Caleb leans closer, but Depa just breathes in, breathes out, and then says, "This quadrant here, Master Mace is somewhere in there." Ayo quickly brings the area into focus, enlarging it and starting to run a check of it.
"That starts right beyond the nebula, where the general would have come out," he says. "There shouldn't be more than two or three systems." He trails off, frowning. After a moment, he leans over to check his scanner, then glances back at the map, looking unsettled.
"Ayo?" Pons asks, concerned. Ayo jabs a finger at a section of space on the map, empty and featureless.
"My instruments are picking up a whole system here," he says. "A star and five planets, but it's not showing up on the map."
"Isn't that map from the Jedi Archives?"
Caleb asks, flicking a glance from Ao to Depa. But it has all the other nearby systems on it, right?
There have been systems deleted from the archive before, Ahsoka says, grim. But why would anyone care about deleting a Sith planet?
They deleted all the records of Kamino to hide Pons and his brothers, to hide that they'd commissioned a whole army of clone troopers, ready to fight a war no one believed was coming. Cold prickles down Pons' spine, and he takes a breath, meets Depa's eyes as she turns to look at him, sees the understanding there, dark and resigned, and says what they're both thinking.
To hide what's on it.
But only a Jedi could do that, Caleb protests.
Yes, Depa agrees quietly, and straightens. Mace is there. I'm certain of it.
Pons would be sure of that, too, even without her saying as much. It's not something that requires a sense of the Force, either. He just knows Jedi and their tendency to crash headlong into the biggest spot of trouble in any given situation.
Take us there, he orders Clip, who immediately starts punching in hyperspace coordinates. Ao, keep an eye out for any trace of that cruiser, too.
Yes, sir, Ao murmurs, and Depa lets out a careful breath.
Hurry, she says softly. Something's happening. Mace is in danger.
Pons shoots her a startled look, but she isn't watching him. Her eyes are on the stars ahead of them, just blurring into streaks as they jump into hyperspace. And one of her hands is curled tightly around the back of Clip's chair. It makes something hard and grim settle in Pon's chest. And he steps back, touching Ahsoka's shoulder when he catches her biting her lip.
We'll make it in time, he tells her. That's what Lightning Squadron's good at.
Because Mace is their general. He's saved all of them before, heading into battle beside them more times than Pons can count. He cares and he's careful about it, and he's the reason Lightning's only lost a handful of men, no matter how many times they've hit first and hit hard.
Pons takes a breath and goes to get his armor on.
They've got work to do.
General, Colt says quietly. On the steps of the mansion, Shock pauses. She doesn't look back, doesn't look down at the pair of droids crumpled at her feet, still sparking.
Yes, Colt, she asks.
Colt's breath is harsh, just faintly rueful. He doesn't quite know what to say.
You're sure about this? Is too stupid to bear.
And be careful is impossible. Dooku is a Sith. Powerful and ferocious and willing to kill, no matter how good Shock is. There's always the chance that Dooku is better.
Out of the corner of his eye, Colt catches a shift, turns. There's a Mandalorian in full armor crossing the square, but they aren't turning, aren't looking anywhere. And after a moment, Colt breathes out and lets it go. Nar Shaddaa has a lot of Mandalorians looking for work or picking up bounties, after all.
Just don't let him take you by surprise, he says.
Dooku.
Finally, finally, Shock turns to look at him, and her expression is almost jarringly serene, perfectly steady. She smiles at him, and Colt tries not to think about how her mouth feels under his, or the way her body feels pressed up against his own. Tries not to think how her smile looks from so close, or the way her mind feels curled around his own. And she touches his mind again, a warm thread of light that feels like her in his head, and a flicker of reassurance comes from it.
Dooku may surprise me, she says, perfectly even. But I will have you and Blitz and Havoc to help me recover from it.
Which is great and all, but Dooku might get the drop on all three of us, too, Blitz says, unimpressed. Sith are good at that. We'll watch your back. Just watch your front in return, General.
Shock smiles faintly.
I have no intention of dying today, she says. But should Dooku lose his life in this fight, I will have no regrets.
She's kind, but she's also ruthless. Colt's fingers itch to reach out and touch. Like that first sweet shock of realizing he could all over again. Not a soft thing, maybe. Or at least not just soft. But he wants to press her against the wall and cover her with his own body and watch her cut down their enemies all at once. He kissed her, and now they're going to face Dooku in his own territory. Colt has never felt the potential of losing weigh so heavily on him before. Shock's thoughts touch his own again, warm but peaceful, like a pool of still water reflecting sunlight. It's steady reassurance, ironclad faith, and Colt sets his jaw and lets himself breathe it in, accepts it, lets her feel that, and gets a fond brush of her mind in return. Perfect belief in him and his brothers, caught up in the sleek lines of her certainty that the Force will guide them through, that there will be an after when they can take advantage of everything new between them. "I'll scout," Havok says, smiling a little, and ducks past them, slipping through the door with his sniper rifle slung over his back. He vanishes into the shadows within the mansion, and with a put-upon sigh, Blitz follows, pointedly pushing the door mostly shut behind him. Though he doesn't go far, it makes Colt scowl, but he still takes advantage of the momentary privacy, stepping close. Shock doesn't hesitate. She steps into him, lets Colt curl his hands around her waist, and pull her that one bit closer. Leaning in, she rests their foreheads together, and for a moment, all Colt can think about is that moment in the infirmary, Shock holding his helmet so carefully. He hadn't meant it to be a romantic gesture at the time, not really, just... She's always one of the things that he knows without hesitation that he can trust. Shock will do whatever she can, whatever she needs to, in order to keep Colt and all the clones like him safe. Shock smiles, and her fingers curl around his elbow, soft but yielding. "There are no other clones just like you, Colt," she says softly. Colt closes his eyes, doesn't lift his head, lets her feel the way those words hit, what they mean. The Jedi have always seen individuals where the rest of the galaxy sees the same person, repeated like an infinite number, bred for war. "I hope not, sir," he says. Means, "I hope no one else feels like this about you, because I won't be kind to any competition." She chuckles a little, and Colt tips his head, can't resist the urge to press his mouth to hers one more time. There's still that burn of doing something he shouldn't, but Colt ignores it, doesn't care. She wants him to kiss her, she wants him to stay with her, and Colt doesn't care about a single carking other thing in the whole galaxy. Shock is a Jedi, her duty is always going to come first. But Colt will make her duty his and help her for as long as he's allowed. That's all he wants from the end of the war, however it happens. When he pulls away, Shock is smiling, her eyes warm with something like humor. "After," she murmurs, and then, "that Mandalorian has circled the mansion twice now." "Three times, I think," Colt says and grins, hard and sharp. "They were coming around for their second circuit when we got here." Shock chuckles. "Not one of Dooku's, I think," she says. And then, "we shouldn't keep the count waiting." Havok and his itchy trigger finger are probably getting impatient, Colt agrees, and taps his forehead against hers once more. "General?" "Commander." Shock's fingers frame his cheek for one instant before she pulls away. Then pushes the door open and raises her calm. "Blitz, Havok, as we discussed." "Planned," Colt mutters, raising his blaster and following at her heels. The house is ornate, gloomy, and ostentatious. He hates it already.
"Jedi don't plan," Shock says mildly,
and Cody grimaces. General, please, my stress levels hate me enough already. Release your worry into the Force, Colt, and all will be well. The curve of Shock's smile says she knows exactly how that response aggravates him. Makes him want to kiss her again, too, but most things do that right now. Save the bickering for the bedroom, maybe, Blitz says pointedly over the comm. And then, quick, no offense, General T. Shock just chuckles, unclipping her lightsaber from her belt. Dooku is here, is all she says. Close. Colt takes a breath, braces his blaster against his shoulder, wishes briefly for his armor, but getting through Nar Shaddaa without being stopped was worth leaving it on the ship. You can hide us? He asks. She hardly needs to, a cold voice says. And Colt twitches, spins, raising his weapon. Dooku is approaching down a long, wide hall, dark cloak flaring out behind him. Without hesitation, Colt takes the shot. The red blade of Dooku's lightsaber reflects it back at him, and Colt has one half-second to feel a flare of fear before Shock whirls in front of him, lightsaber lit. The bolt dissipates, and she raises her blade, unsmiling. Count, she says politely. My old friend. Dooku returns, equally gracious, despite the chill in his eyes. You've finally come to face me yourself. This was never inevitable, Shock says, almost gently. This is your choices that have brought us here. There has been too much suffering at your hands for me to sit back and allow it any longer, Dooku. Allow it, Dooku repeats. And if there were any warmth in that tone, it would be amusement. My lovely Shock, you allow nothing. You simply cannot stop me. There's a clatter behind him, and Colt jerks around, just in time to see a squad of super battle droids marching through the main door. He curses, retreating a step to put his back to Shock's, and tries to calculate how they can do this without forcing Havoc or Blitz to reveal themselves. Commander, Shock says evenly, and brings her lightsaber up, level across her body. You have the droids. Super battle droids aren't anyone's idea of a good time, but Colt huffs. Focus on the count, General, he says flatly, and he can feel her smile as her thoughts brush his. Very well, I leave them to you. Shock tilts her head and says, I am a merciful woman, Dooku, as befits a Jedi. I will offer you this opportunity to surrender, but I will not give you another. Colt can't help it. He grins, all ferocity and teeth. Good hunting, he says, and Shock hums, a low, rumbling sound that's more feline than anything. It makes his heartbeat kick up, lets adrenaline rise, and a flash of blue out of the corner of his eye just drives the anticipation higher. And the same to you, Colt, she says, and is gone in a swirl of silks and humming blue. Colt hears her collide with Dooku, the clash of their lightsabers, hears his grunt as she forces him back a step, and feels a vicious flare of satisfaction, even as the first droid lifts its blaster. He doesn't move, just faces them squarely, guarding Shock's back. I don't think so, he says to them, and in the darkness off the hall, a twin pair of red blades ignite, and something as cold as ice streaks through Colt's chest. He wrenches back, even as Ventress steps forward, and her eyes are burning with fury, obvious marks of a fight on her, but she's here and all but unharmed. Apparently Quinlan wasn't distraction enough, Colt thinks grimly, and aims right at her head as he fires. A casual sweep of one lightsaber deflects the bolt, then the next two, and Ventress advances, smiling thinly. Well, well, she says darkly. A cute little rodent trying to set up a nest. I'll get rid of you first. Ventress likes killing clones. She's racked up a body count in the high hundreds at this point, and Colt breathes through the fear, lets certainty settle like a shroud. He's probably going to die facing her. He and Blitz and Havoc together won't be enough to stop her. Ventress is a Jedi killer, and she's good at it. And once he's dead, she'll go for Shock. And even someone as skilled as Shock T can't hold back Dooku and Ventress at the same time. Carking hell. Colt sets his jaw, breathes, and lifts his chin. "Only one rat that I can see," he retorts. "And it's the bald, creepy one." Ventress scowls, lifts a hand. Colt feels the sharp jolt of a vast force grabbing him, lifting him right off his feet, and sees Ventress level her blade right at him. "I suppose my enemies can't all be as charming as Obi-Wan," she says, and the slant of her smile is a cruel thing. "What a shame." "Colt!" Blitz shouts, but even as he throws himself out into the open, the droids turn, aim at him, open fire. They drive him back, and Colt curses, struggling hard against Ventress's hold, wrenches at it, straining desperately. Ventress yanks him across the hall, right at her blade, and Colt doesn't even have time to shout.